What's the difference?
All right, we're going to start here, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. Thanks for your patience as we get started. We want to let you know, for as we start, Representative McEwen and Representative Bentz are excused this afternoon. And we understand that Representative Bentz is listening via the interweb, so occasionally we'll say hello to him. He's driving back to Eastern Oregon. We're going to start today by opening public hearings on all three bills that are on our agenda: House Bill 2323, 2223, 2230, all of which relate to the Oregon Growth Board. And I am going to take the step of handing the gavel over to Vice Chair Gorsuch and come around and provide a little introduction with Representative Conger. If you want to give a summary, Troy, while I head around the other direction, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2323 establishes the Oregon Growth Board Task Force, sunsets task force to June 30th, 2015, stipulates 10-member task force, including two appointees from the Senate President, two appointees from the Speaker of the House, four appointees from the Governor, with one from banking, one from credit unions, one from managing investments, and one from small business employment experience, one appointee from the Treasurer's Office, and the appointee from the Oregon Business Development Department. Requires the task force to make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly regarding information, functions, duties, and powers of the Oregon Growth Board, including but not limited to interaction of cooperation of the Oregon Investment Council and the Oregon Growth Account Board. Stipulates that the Oregon Business Development Department shall provide staff to the task force, declares emergency effective upon date. We do have in our possession the -1 amendments, which have been uploaded on OLAS for the members. I am not going to read all three bills. 2223 and 2330 are the exact same relating to clause as the first bill I read.
All right. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Tobias Reed from Beaverton. What I want to do very quickly is just take you back a trip in time and describe very briefly my experience and what brought us to this point in the Growth Board. And Representative Conger, I think, will add to that conversation from a slightly different angle. And then I think we have a number of other people, including the co-chairs of the Growth Board as it now exists, to describe the work and what the Growth Board hopes to do. Between the time that Governor Kitzhaber was elected and when he was inaugurated, he asked Treasurer Wheeler, Wally Van Valkenburg, who was chair of the Business Development Commission, and me to serve as something of an economic development transition team. And in the brief time between his election and his inauguration, we did what we could, but basically said to the governor, we need some more time for some more comprehensive work and recommendations. And he was agreeable to that. We spent some time going around the state listening to what business leaders and entrepreneurs needed, and to their answers to the sort of fundamental question of what is missing or what is holding them back from moving their businesses forward. And we heard different versions of the story and different details in different industries, different geographies, different communities, but one of the most fundamentally common themes to emerge was access to capital. That means different things to different people and in different forms. But we heard very clearly that that was a problem for different businesses around the state. We also heard very clearly that the limited dollars that Oregon puts to economic development purposes are often too rigid and too spread across different agencies, not flexible, as flexible as we would like, not as coordinated as we would like. So with the Growth Board, we came back to the shorter session, the 2012 session, and passed House Bill 4040. Everyone in this room who was here for that session voted for it. I think it passed the House with one no vote. And the Growth Board, about which you will hear lots more in the minutes to come, went out and started work to understand the economic development activities that the state now undertakes and how they might be better coordinated, better leveraged, and operate more effectively and efficiently. So the Growth Board is back seeking the legislature's approval, in particular to remove the sunset that now exists in House Bill 4040 that we passed and the governor signed. And I will let the rest of the board, the chairs in particular, describe the work to date and the plan going forward. But I think it's reasonable to suggest that this is one of the most fundamental activities we can undertake as an economic development initiative to make sure that we are as effective as possible, as coordinated, flexible, and getting capital in the hands of business leaders and entrepreneurs around the state. I'm happy to take questions, but I'm also eager to have Representative Conger add his experience. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for allowing me to testify on these three bills. Not sure which one you're going to move, but I first of all want to apologize to my colleagues who've already had to put up with me testifying in a different committee earlier this morning on a different bill. This one won't be as long, I promise. I supported House Bill 4040 back in 2012, and for a variety of reasons, which I'll get to in a second. Since it passed, of course, the Oregon Growth Board has come into existence, and I should give really the credit for the passage of the bill and the successful formation and progress that's been made by the Oregon Growth Board, first and foremost to Representative Reed and to Treasurer Wheeler, both of whom put a lot of effort into this initiative. I also have to thank the members of the Oregon Growth Board, who, of course, do not get compensated for the board meetings that they attend. And, you know, so they're putting their time forward based on the belief, which I share, that this effort, this structure is worthwhile and will bear fruit for the state in the future. As evidence for that, I would refer you to the report which was required by House Bill 4040 of the Oregon Growth Board. Highly recommend that you, like I have, read all 202 pages and take to heart the recommendations in there. And I thought I'd just share a couple of the points that I took away. I actually have not read all 202 pages, but if you read the executive summary, you can kind of come to the heart of the matter and then, of course, refer to the appendices as you will. A couple of the points that are made early on that the Oregon Growth Board sets forth as, I guess, goals for itself. Remember, this is a completely new entity, so it's starting from scratch or from a completely blank slate. Goal number one is deploy and increase capital for early stage investments. And goal number two is target investments that support capital ecosystems and grow scalable traded sector companies. Both of those goals, I think, are exceedingly important. And I'm obviously, well, I think I forgot to introduce myself for the record. Thanks a lot for the reminder. For the record, Jason Conger, representing House District 54.
Well, actually, Representative Reed did introduce.
I sort of introduced.
Yeah,
well,
so I wasn't.
Anyway, yeah.
No evil intended.
No evil intent at all. But I'm ashamed to admit I forgot at the beginning. House District 54 is basically the city of Bend. Bend is part of rural Oregon, those of you who have spent any time at all in Oregon over the last few years know that the entire state has experienced a really horrific recession. The rural parts of the state, I would argue, have recovered little, if at all. And I guess it depends on what part of the rural areas in the state you look at. But to give you a sense, the Bend Metropolitan Statistical Area, as of December of last year, still had an unemployment rate of 10.8%. And that's unfortunately, I mean, fortunately, I guess, looking at the glass half full, it's better than it was a year ago, December of 2011, when it was 12%. And in those rural areas, there is, I would even say, an enhanced need for the realization of the goals that the Oregon Growth Board has put forward and that I mentioned in my testimony. Specifically, there's a very entrepreneurial culture that exists in Bend, and I believe in other parts of Oregon as well. But there are an extraordinary number of risk takers, entrepreneurs, people with ideas. There's also a developing ecosystem of startup companies, and I've had the pleasure of working with startup companies for a number of years as an attorney, so as a sort of a observer of many of them. And there are factors that you need. The first is an idea, an entrepreneur, someone who is literally ready to chase a dream. The second is you need a bunch of other stuff. People who are educated, who can be hired as employees or taken on as partners. You need professional help. You need a system that's conducive to the starting of high-risk ventures. And we should have no illusions. Startup companies, especially in the technology sector, can be very successful, but they are very risky. And so often people who are going into these ventures are doing so with the awareness they could lose everything they own. Somewhere along the line in the development of these companies, and in fact more than once, capital is needed in order for them to grow, because they don't have revenue initially most of the time, and unless they can somehow magically be bootstrapped with no money, an idea-based company has to have capital until the idea is developed to the point where it's ready to actually enter the marketplace. So it's extremely important. And interestingly, I'll just conclude here quickly, but I wanted to mention something I thought was extraordinarily obvious, but it was in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce report on business from last year. 99.7% of all employers and over half of all private sector employees are in small businesses. That is, I think, a statistic that probably is even more skewed in rural Oregon. Not so much in the Portland metropolitan statistical area, but in the rest of the state. And the Chamber of Commerce said, stated the obvious, small business access to capital is critical for economic recovery, meaning economic recovery in the whole country. The Oregon Growth Board report goes a little bit further and says, and this is on page 162, paragraph 5. Knowledge-based companies have more difficulty than collateral-rich companies in obtaining capital in the startup phases, especially. And guess what? In Bend and in a lot of rural Oregon, knowledge-based companies are the ones that make the most sense, because rural Oregon's remote. And if you're a collateral-based company or a collateral-rich company, so that you could obtain financing in other ways, a lot of times you wouldn't locate in rural Oregon, because you have to transport whatever it is that you have as collateral or your product further. And so knowledge-based companies, on the other hand, really don't have a lot of transportation costs when it's just beamed magically through the internet or whatever. So again, to conclude, and I know I've taken too much time, but this issue actually is something I feel very passionately about. I think the work of the Oregon Growth Board and the effort on the part of the state to coordinate the resources that we have already deployed with the intent of helping to provide capital, not just at the early stage, but at later stages, to grow companies and create jobs and long-term create small, medium, and big companies in the state of Oregon is extremely important. And I think I just want to encourage you to work the bills. I know you will, or one of the bills. And again, thank you for the time.
Thank you, Representative Conger. Representative Reed, are there any questions?
Yeah.
Representative Doherty.
And if there was a question or comment, because I know that capital is the most important thing when it comes to especially entrepreneurial businesses in Portland, or in the state of Oregon. And I know that when I was first in the legislature, we had the Access to Business Capital, then Senator Bonamici and myself, and just a very small amount of money created about 350 jobs, and had about 30 other businesses were able to recapitalize and to go through and expand their businesses. So the ideas that you guys have here are very, very, I think it's going to be monumental down the road to a lot of the businesses in Oregon, very much so.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doherty, you've also sort of foreshadowed some of the conversation I expect that the people who are going to testify after us will have, particularly with respect to microlending. So appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just add that I think that's a great example of what can happen mm-hmm. when you have the right mix almost in existence, and you just get that little bit of extra push, and it has a highly leveraged effect on our resources that we have to steward as a legislature, the tax resources that we're entrusted with. So,
and it was especially at a time when it was very, very, very hard, not necessarily to get capital from bank loans and that kind of thing, and it was a very, very small capital, but at least with the help that the state of Oregon and Business Oregon was able to do. And hopefully we won't hit those times again in our lifetime, but we need to be prepared.
Absolutely.
Further questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We'd like to now call up to testify Mr. Tim Reinhart.
Tom.
I'm sorry, Tom Reinhart.
I believe they were.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Reinhart. I'm the Chief of Staff for State Treasurer Ted Wheeler. Proud to be here with Ted's colleagues from the Growth Board, both in front of me and behind me. And I want to acknowledge the many people in the room that worked in the early stages of the formation of this concept and in the actual bill the last session that are also sitting in the room. So thank you to everyone for the work on this. The treasurer could not be here today, and at a couple of other Growth Board meetings, I have been the designee, so I'm happy to be here to briefly reiterate why the treasurer is so passionate about this effort and why the treasurer's office has put time and resources into it. Representative Reed ably took some of the talking points and some of the items that I was going to relay, so I will just will touch on them and add a little bit of color that I know the treasurer would want to talk about if he was here. In terms of the way that Treasurer Wheeler sees the economic development apparatus in this state, he sees three opportunities for the Growth Board to add value for the state: coordination, flexibility, and leverage. Coordination, let me be more specific, a unified strategic framework for the many programs and efforts that we have across all state agencies. We heard stories as the Treasurer traveled around the state with Representative Reed, Wally Van Valkenburg, and others about people's confusion about where to go, what was the best program, or not knowing about programs. And Ted envisions the Growth Board as a way to bring a lot of these together and bring the strengths of them to bear as one unit. We often heard stories about loan programs that could be connected in stronger ways, or programs within the Treasurer's Office, particularly the Oregon Growth Account that I know you'll hear more about later, that could be connected more strongly with other programs. Flexibility. We very much see the Growth Board as a place like the Oregon Investment Council for a group of appointees that are experts in this area of access to capital to be able to make more quick decisions depending on economic circumstances, to not be constrained by what may be old requirements and outdated models that we follow in terms of our economic development strategies. The Oregon Investment Council, as you well know, has been highly successful and has a lot of latitude to move around the asset classes and invest in areas where the 21st century economy demands we be invested for the pension fund. And finally, leverage. It's a priority for Treasurer Wheeler, and I know the co-chairs of the board will lay this out in their presentation in a minute, that we always seek to invest alongside private sector partners that are experts in the area of capital formation, that the state is a partner, but not the leader and not the only investor in early stage capital and other investments. And that when the state has been successful in access to capital, the examples show that we have been a partner with private sector partners, and we have looked to leverage capital in terms of every state dollar should bring in other dollars from partners, and particularly out-of-state partners. So with that, I am going to pass it on to our colleagues and friends on the Growth Board who have done such a great job putting together this report, unless there are questions before
questions for Tom. Let's see. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Let's hear from the co-chairs, our illustrious co-chairs, Jerry Langler and Patty Moss. I missed out on the meeting this morning, but part of the reason we chose to have the hearing this afternoon is that the Growth Board was meeting this morning, so we're trying again to be efficient. We're glad you're here and eager to hear you. Please.
Good afternoon. I'm Patricia Moss, and I'm Vice Chairman of Bank of the Cascades, and I live in Bend, Oregon.
And Mr. Chair, I'm Jerry Langler from OVP Venture Partners, and I live in Portland.
So thank you for having us, and we'll get right into our discussion about the Oregon Growth Board today. We have been meeting as a board since May on a monthly basis for about 4 hours a day to really try and do an appropriate amount of work to create what we think can be a very good opportunity for the state of Oregon. And our goal is to lift Oregon's efforts and improve outcomes to attract and make available capital for business formation and growth. And we think we need to do that in a way that effectively competes with other states. We, from the beginning, set out four basic goals that we wanted to achieve, or objectives that we wanted to achieve, that we would measure the Oregon Growth Board success by. And we think the most important things to do are create sustainable high-wage jobs, to, of course, generate positive financial returns for the state, very importantly, to leverage outside private capital, and importantly, to increase the number of businesses that are served. And you've heard a lot of statistics about small businesses. As a banker, I can tell you job creation really does come from the creation in small businesses. This morning we heard that the net job growth has come from organizations that have been created in the last 5 years. So very important for the state to be on the creation mode. And of course, that will result in an Oregon economy that is growing more rapidly and growing more sustainably. And we live in a competitive world. Oregon lives in a competitive challenge from other states. What we used to see are states chasing big plants, manufacturing companies, and now what we see is the competition for homegrown innovation throughout states. The progressive states, and we did a lot of work on looking at the competitive landscape. Really, what they have very comprehensive agendas. They have R&D activity that's both generated on public and private basis. Importantly, they have an entrepreneurial ecosystem. And if you look at the life cycle of a business from the concept stage all the way up through debt, expansion, infrastructure, financing, there's an ecosystem in place. And what we have discovered is we have some gaps in our ecosystem. And of course, they've created availability and access to growth capital. We're well positioned from a strategic basis. We have some gaps that we really need to fill. And one of those gaps is in the early stage and growth portion of the ecosystem. We can leverage the infrastructure that we have and create a sustainable environment and advantage. We can build on what we already have and try and fill the gaps. One of the first things that we looked at was the need. And there were several tools to help us look at the need. There's a capital scan that was conducted in 2000 and 2011 and 2012 by OCF, the Oregon Community Foundation, in cooperation with Memorial Trust, the Office of the Treasurer, and Business Oregon. That was one of the very first documents that we examined to see if we could identify and illuminate the gaps. There was also work done by the Ford Foundation and the USDA, which was presented to us as part of the Scruggs report, and it provided a lot of national context and pointed out to us where Oregon is at a disadvantage so we could match our gaps with areas that were less advantageous. An example of where our system had some gaps was we missed out on the deployment of some SSBCI funds, a significant amount, and it was due to our inability to meet the structure and timing of grants, which was specifically related to early stage. So those are the types of things that we're looking at to fill those gaps.
Mr. Chair.
I have a quick question, Representative Cameron.
Yeah, SS.
State Small Business Credit Enhancement? No, what is it? State Small Business Credit Initiative, thank you.
Sorry for all the acronyms.
The acronym? Okay. Thanks.
Some of the tools that the Growth Board that we've been using is, of course, the Oregon Investment Act, House Bill 4040, which we have, I think we have printed in plastic covered sheets to keep referring back to it to see what the original charge was and what was trying to be accomplished. As I said, we have met every month, with the exception of 1 month since May of 2012, to assess and make the recommendations that we made at year end. We took inventory of the existing programs, and you heard earlier talk about how does an entrepreneur access the system. If you look at your appendix on the very last page of your presentation, it's entitled Resources for Oregon Entrepreneurs. We took an inventory of what the existing programs are And as there are many programs, some are obviously more effective than others, but the coordinated and consolidated delivery of those programs is one of the things that we think can be accomplished better. We looked at best practices from other states. For example, Colorado, who is a state of about 5 million people, we have about 4 million people, they have a public-private partnership where they have invested $150 million in an early stage fund with some of the same objectives in mind. We're not suggesting that we can be there today, but what we are suggesting is that we need to build a very strong foundation so that we can get in a position to be more competitive and to help the economy. So with that, that's sort of an overview of how we got to where we are with the recommendation, and Co-Chair Jerry is going to take it and show you part of the process that we've now outlined.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about the process that young companies come to be and then come to be major job creators. And we've tried to lay out here, you know, something that, again, it's obviously a bit of a stick figure for a complex world, and these boxes and arrows don't exist separately. They overlap. But starting at the left, this also helps you understand perhaps where some of the other things that you support coming out of the legislature fit in. So on the left, the highest risk, high reward, that's in, for a technology company, for example, and not all of what we're talking about is, but for technology companies, things like Oregon Inc., the signature research centers, that's where the very early stage big ideas come from. They then have to would flow into things that the Oregon Growth Board would support for now, and again, we'll come back to that in a moment. And then as those companies grow and develop, things that Business Oregon does today would be more appropriate. If you look down at the middle and the bottom, you can kind of see what's going on. So in the early stages of company germination, you know, it's, do you have a big idea and can you make it work? And that's, again, what Oregon Inc. And the research centers are involved in, for example. And that's, you actually don't need a lot of money there usually, but it's usually money in the form of equity. It's a small number of people. Those people have very deep domain expertise in whatever business they're going after, but they need a lot of advice. They need more mentoring than they need cash. And that's one of the reasons why we think of this as an ecosystem, is if you just invest cash without knowledge, that cash will be wasted. And if you invest knowledge without cash, the people will be wasted. The good ideas will be wasted. You have to find the right balance at the right time. As those companies then develop, they need more money. They're a little less risky, but they need more money, and they're trying to essentially figure out, can they make whatever this big idea is into a real product, and will customers engage? Now you may be up to tens of people in terms of jobs, and you need both functional and domain expertise, so you're starting to have not just whoever developed the product, but people who can sell it and support it and manufacture it. And in that sense, a lot of what goes on, frankly, in the Oregon University systems, beyond the Signature Research Centers, begins to play here more, much more broadly. And but they still need a lot of mentoring. That's a very different thing between starting a company and starting to grow a company. And then finally, on the right side, as the risk goes down and the company gets larger, you know, you're trying to get multiple repeat customers. You're finding out, can that business scale? That takes more money. It may be equity, it may be debt, depending on both the strength of the company and to some degree the circumstances of the economy. And there you get into hundreds of jobs. And of course, that's where we all would like to be. But a well-trained workforce becomes a requirement. And again, in other parts of your time down here, that's things like the community college system may very well be playing a role. So, you know, we kind of fit in the middle of this as a functionary to help tie these things together. Another way to think of this, and the reason we focus on the early stage, is, you know, great big companies don't grow up overnight, and they don't grow up from just one seedling. You know, you've got to plant a lot of seeds to get a really big tree. And so filling the top of the funnel, to change my analogy, is really important. You need to have hundreds of startups, each with a very small number of employees, maybe 25,000, maybe 100,000, maybe $500,000 of investment, to really kick off the system. And from those companies, they get winnowed down. Some will make it, some will not. But you will get tens of companies from those hundreds that have something in the tens to low hundreds of employees, and they take probably low millions of dollars to get there. And then if you're fortunate, at the end someday, you know, you get a handful of companies with hundreds to thousands of employees, but they've taken a lot of money. Now, I think it's important to recognize a couple of things. One is part of the task that we think we have in the Oregon Growth Board is to help fill the top of this funnel. Part of the task we think we have is to help broaden the bottom of the funnel. So instead of just getting one or two out, you get three, four, or five. That, the difference of that could be dramatic in state employment. And it's also important that in the middle of this funnel picture, those are not wasted efforts. Companies that end up with tens to hundreds of employees and a few million dollars in sales can be terrific parts of our economy. So not everybody comes out the bottom of this analogy. Some go out the side, and that's just fine. As Patty mentioned, we did an inventory of the state programs, both state-funded and privately funded. The appendix is the eye chart that is very hard to read with all of the programs. This is a little easier to read. These are the state-supported programs, hopefully, as you can see, color-keyed to what department they come out of. And there are many, and they each have their role. We have chosen for now to focus toward the top, recognizing that, you know, someday we may move our way down in things where we think we can help, but basically try to fill the top of that funnel more effectively and either subsume something like the Oregon Growth Account or work alongside some of the other groups and be sort of an advisory and allocation resource. Tom said that we basically looked for a model. As you know, is there some other group that operates in a way that makes sense to us that would be similar? And we think the Oregon Investment Council is that model. They have the ability to allocate capital, and so to move money around to where it could be most effective. And we think that's important. And as you heard, you know, both moving money and also being able to capture money like the SSBCI money. Flexibility to be able to react to changes, so agility for the portfolio, being able to change some direction from time to time as needed, utilizing outside professionals. So make it very clear, we will not invest in individual companies or projects. We do not want to be picking winners and losers. We are not skilled at that. We are not staffed for that. We will not do that. But we will pick people who do that. Managers or program leaders who, in fact, have the skills and the time to go make those calls. And then along the way, we will set very clear standards of performance, both in terms of financial performance and return, as well as job creation coming out of this effort. So back to Patty for the next steps.
So the next steps that the Oregon Growth Board is advocating is the removal of the sunset provision of the Oregon Investment Act. Obviously, in order for us to move forward, that we need to have that sunset removed. And to support an umbrella strategy that invests across the capital continuum. And that is much like the graph that Jerry just put up. Early stage, growth, debt, mentoring, there's an element of economic development and an element of capital access, and the gap that we have most identified that needs the most attention is the early stage. And we want to balance a drive for financial returns with sustainable high wage job creation. So how that looks exactly is yet to be determined, and certainly that balance will change based on the economic condition, but we want to have the flexibility to meet both of those objectives. To create the Oregon Growth Fund with different funding sources and different distribution obligations than currently exist in the Oregon Growth Account, and to provide the board with some allocation authority in conjunction with the Business Oregon Commission to coordinate capital resources. And again, an example of that would be the Oregon Investment Council and the flexibility and the ability to react to the changing economic environment. When more asset financing is needed because businesses are more depressed, want to be able to change the allocation that provides for more credit enhancement, when more early stage creation, job creation needs to be made, some flexibility within some well-defined parameters to be proactive with the economic environment rather than be reactive. And again, to make sure that we are clear that the board will not invest in any particular special project, will not make a direct loan, will not invest in a company, but will do that through other resources that are available. So the process, initially, we want to go after the low-hanging fruit of early-stage needs. We've identified that gap. We didn't actually identify the gap. Others have identified the gap, and it's been very consistent in that identification. Focus on filling the top of the tunnel, at the top of the funnel. We want to develop a portfolio across Oregon regions and industries. We've talked about metro and non-metro. We want to have the access to capital be indifferent to the place that someone lives, but create access to capital for both metro and non-metro areas. And, of course, develop a monitoring system to provide feedback. Importantly, we want to be a catalyst for private dollars. We think the side-by-side investment of state dollars and private money is essential to creating the ecosystem that needs to be developed. And importantly, we want to move systematically over time to focus, beginning our focus on early stage and moving through the life cycle of the business. The funding. What we did is we looked at best practices of other states, and we believe that Oregon should fund this particular portion of the investment at the level of 40 to 50 million for early stage, for the early stage and growth portion of our challenge. We've identified and outlined 35 million. We think that's a good starting spot. If you compare it to the example that we used earlier of Colorado at 150 million, it certainly is a place to start. We need to prove that we can have effective, efficient delivery of the dollars that we start with, but this is a starting point, not we still have a ways to go to get to our destination. And importantly, as we move forward, we want to build this to be sustainable. This isn't a one-year investment. This is investment in Oregon for a continued period of time that can continue to grow, create more jobs, and create more sustainability. And Jerry and I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. We've got a number of other people who are going to testify about specific, I think, their specific version and experience with what the board's been doing, but here's a good opportunity to get some perspective and questions about the board generally. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for the overview. You mentioned Colorado 150, but it was private and public dollars. Do you know what the percentage is of the 150 that's private versus public dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, it's a terrific question. They just announced this program recently. Governor Hickenlooper just announced it like a week ago, and the answer is no, we don't know yet what the split is, but we certainly will go find out. I'm sure that will be public data. Unless Jim, I didn't think we knew yet.
So in the ask of $35 million, we don't know how many private dollars you would estimate to leverage with that and what the total fund would be.
So I think there will be at least two models to answer your question. One might be private dollars that actually get commingled. And the way Colorado is doing it, I believe, is a fund of funds. The money comes all together and gets all invested together. A second model is side by side. So there may be entities in the state who would basically want to take advantage of the manager selection that we would do and invest in those same managers themselves, but not through this body, but just on their own. I think it's fair to say that it should be highly leveraged, as in, you know, we should get a lot more private leverage on the dollars. Sorry, the third element is money that follows our dollars. So I think if you look at what's done in the Oregon Growth Account, they look at how much money was invested in a manager who invested in an Oregon company and how much other money that Oregon company got invested in it from other sources because it had the stability to attract that money. We will have that, certainly, but I think we'll have these other two parts that the Oregon Growth Account has not had, which is through this Oregon Growth Fund idea where we actually could pool the money, or for those who didn't want to be pooled, be side by side. But as now, we, you know, we don't know yet, but we certainly have started conversations with some of the larger capital sources in the state, some of the major foundations, for example, about potentially doing something once we're up and running.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No problem. Any questions? Let's see. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just thinking about sort of in practical terms how this will work, and thank you very much for your presentation. You used the term fund-to-fund, and that struck a chord with me. Is that, analogizing to other models, is that sort of what you're thinking, is that we would be providing Oregon Growth Account would be a fund, which we would then fund managers who are attracting private capital as part of it, and then there's also sort of a consulting arm that I think you mentioned. Is that correct?
Okay. Well, the Representative Davis, largely yes. So certainly the bulk of what where the money would be used would be to invest in managers who would invest in companies.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the dollars, as the Oregon Growth Account has done today, would be invested into part of the ecosystem where the direct return is not nearly as obvious. So things such as the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network, the various angel fund organizations, and so on, that help create that ecosystem and that mentoring. So yes, that's be a very small amount of the money, but a very important part of what this group would do.
Okay, thank you. And sorry, follow up. And currently, the Oregon Growth Account has $28 million. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
And that's funded, just for the benefit of those who don't already know it, from a portion of the Education Stability Fund, which is funded from lottery funds. Mm-hmm. So the bill, 4040, and if we pass one of these to remove the sunset, has the growth board taking responsibility for the growth account as it now exists, if that makes sense.
And follow up.
Yeah.
And then going back upstream, we hit the gold mine. We have the next Facebook. Those returns go back into the Education Stability Fund.
To the extent that the dollars came from the Education Stability Fund, yes. In that last slide, and I'm happy to be corrected if I get this part wrong, the $28 million that comes from the growth account, that would be true. $5 million that comes from other sources within the governor's budget, that wouldn't necessarily have to go back into the Education Stability Fund.
That could be general fund, essentially.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And Representative Davis, I think, again, one of the slides that's kind of buried in there somewhere, the goal over time would be have a larger piece of this than that small fraction be, in fact, not going back to the Education Stability Fund, but be to available more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fair to say that the board views this in the early stages as largely a proof of concept. If we get this process right, our hope is that the legislature will endorse it and support it and perhaps grow it over
mm-hmm.
time.
Follow up.
Yes, please.
I also just want to thank you and point the committee and anybody listening to the appendix, which I think is excellent, resources for Oregon entrepreneurs. It demonstrates, I think, both a problem and a solution. When the problem is sort of compete, you've got all these different foundations and groups walking parallel instead of together in some instances. But this seems to be a good first step into trying to consolidate those operations. And to the extent we can do so under the government tab would be great, because we do have, at least by this count, 10 different economic development organizations working in the state somewhat independently.
I think you've hit on very much the nail on the head as to what we're after here.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cameron.
He must be young because he can read it.
I noticed, Representative Cameron, you have an internet device in front of you. There's a URL right there.
Oh, and I can just bring it up.
Yes.
Wow. He must be young because he can do that, too.
Magic machine.
That's magic. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much. Please stick around. We may have more questions for you. So next up, Jim Coonan and Linda Weston, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. My name is Linda Weston. I'm the President and Executive Director of the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network, OEN, which is based in Portland.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Vice Chairman, Committee
Members, my name is Jim McKinnon. I'm my home's in Portland, but I spend 4 days of the week in Central Oregon. I'm the Venture Catalyst Manager. You're happy to take questions on that later. I work for EDCO. I'm the past chair of the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network, entrepreneur, I'm an investor, and I'm also a member of the Oregon Growth Board.
So we are here today to talk about support for the Oregon Growth Board, and the reason is that job growth happens through startup firms. You heard previous testimony that alluded to that. According to research done by the Kauffman Foundation, new firms under 5 years old add an average of 3 million jobs in their first year, while older companies lose 1 million jobs annually. So that suggests that the way to really help spur job growth is by supporting the entrepreneurial ecosystem. Entrepreneurs and innovators really will be the solution to some of our economic challenges because they're the ones who will be creating jobs. So just a little bit about OEN and sort of how we fit in and why we're here. OEN is a 22-year-old nonprofit. Our mission is the education, support, mentoring, and opportunity for access to capital for early-stage, high-growth companies across all sectors. So helping to build a strong economy by supporting and facilitating job growth by working with those who support entrepreneurs. In 2012, nearly 5,000 people statewide participated in OEN's programs statewide, providing education and access to capital for early stage companies. One of the most important things that we believe has to happen is building the capital network statewide, and we believe that OGB can play a very key role in that. A couple of examples about how that works is OEN's Angel Oregon Conference. Investors pool $5,000 into an LLC. They do due diligence on the companies that apply to present. The day of the conference, they vote on which company is going to get the investment award. Since 2005, we developed that model. Through 2012, more than 400 companies had applied for the opportunity. 58 were selected to present. Nearly $1.6 million had been directly invested in those companies through the investor pools. That does not count sidecar investments or additional investment they received. But the most important fact, I think, is that that's resulted in the creation of 741 jobs, and that's pretty significant. It gets to this whole issue of job creation through innovation. So as a part of what we do, we've helped to create angel conferences elsewhere in the state. In the Gorge, in the Southern Willamette Valley, and in Southern Oregon, those conferences in the last 5 years have collectively invested $2.2 million. You're going to hear from Eric Rosenfeld at the Oregon Angel Fund in a few minutes, and you're going to be stunned when you hear how much private sector money has been leveraged by the state's partnership with them and how many people, as a result, they employ. So the Oregon Growth Board, we feel, can really complement entrepreneurial outreach in rural Oregon. OEN's programs outreach all over the state, and strategically, OGB would be able to play a key role in helping that by providing a unified structure to that approach, by ensuring that really scarce resources in the state are used in the most efficient way to support that infrastructure needed to support entrepreneurs. It would certainly complement the work that OEN is already doing statewide. They can help organizations with expertise. They can help to provide that support of climate necessary for entrepreneurship and to help early-stage entrepreneurs grow their companies and to become investor-ready. They can support efforts to continue to build that capital network and ensure that young companies have the access to capital they need to grow. For several years, OEN has been working on a multi-layered, more complex statewide initiative to help young companies outside the Portland metro area, and certainly OGB could help provide infrastructure to assist that part, and at some point could potentially invest in a professionally managed rural or statewide seed investment fund, which gets to the question that was asked a little bit earlier. All of this would be focused on assisting entrepreneurs, and I guess I would close my portion here by saying that I would ask you to keep in mind that when entrepreneurs realize their dreams, really good things happen. And so part of what we need to do is help them realize those dreams and grow their companies.
Thank you, Linda. Do you want to ask questions now, or should I go on?
Let's see. Anyone have questions for Linda? I'll hear from you, Jim.
Okay. I think Linda really hit some of the most important points. I'm here in the role of my role with economic development for Central Oregon. EDCO and OEN have collaborated on a number of issues, one of which we are both in support of the creation of the Oregon Growth Board. We see this as an excellent vehicle to support entrepreneurial activity and job growth throughout the state. And that's important. There's a lot of activity we know going on in Portland, but there's also some great activity happening throughout the state. And they have certain kinds of barriers and challenges that are unique to those areas. And we like that statewide approach that not only OEN takes, but we're hoping that the Oregon Growth Board will take as well. And in particular, the board's focus on supporting entrepreneurial infrastructure. We think that's the right approach. We've heard a little bit before that really it isn't just dollars. It's the human resources as well. And by that, I mean advisory services, mentoring, and education. Those are critical components to increase the odds that the folks at the beginning of Jerry's funnel actually make it through that funnel. We know that for a fact. I think you also mentioned earlier with some research done by Pat Scruggs, nationwide looking at critical parameters to increase the odds of success for startup companies. And in the past, what had been done was spending large amounts of money and having massive failures. Now the different strategy is to do much more structured environment, try to get companies to frankly fail fast and not spend huge amounts of capital. And you can do that. You can now, the technology and the approach has changed a lot so that we can prove out these concepts at a much earlier stage. So small amounts of capital, large amounts of people infrastructure to help to get them from point A to point B. Eric Rosenfeld is going to be talking. He's going to be talking about OAF. My only comment on that, of course, it was birthed out of the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network. And one of the great things about OAF is it's a terrific public-private partnership. And I think I'm not going to steal his metrics from him because they're pretty impressive. I'm tempted, but I'm not gonna do that. But it's a great way, and I think you'll see it as a good role model of the kind of infrastructure we'd like to create throughout the state, using both public foundation monies, private sector monies, leveraging those dollars, using professionals, not getting the state involved in picking winners and losers, and helping us throughout the state. And I'll let Eric really talk to that later. OEN and EDCO, as Linda's mentioned, has worked on an Oregon initiative. So this is a collaborative strategic vision of how to support entrepreneurs throughout the state, not in isolation of what's happening in Portland Metro. We think that, you know, it's not us versus them in any extent. It's really a linking of resources. And we think that the Oregon Growth Board is going to be having that strategic viewpoint that will be looking at these kind of proposals and implementing them on a statewide. Just one example, part of the initiative talks about creating rural accelerators. I think later today you're also going to hear from another entrepreneur, Sarah Cotta. She was monies, I should add, that we got from the Oregon Community Foundation, the first ever economic development grant that they ever provided, helped us to create the first tech accelerator in Central Oregon. That's only been around for a year. But in that time, we've had two sessions, 11 graduating companies, $620,000 of raised capital, 25 full-time employees. Also, I should add, of the four companies that received funding out of our own Ben Venture Conference, three of them were graduates from the accelerator. So what the accelerator is doing is it's taking these raw ideas and companies and turning them into really investable ideas. It's another way, going back to Jerry's funnel, how do we increase the number of companies making it back to the other end? So in conclusion, both OEN and EDCO are large supporters of this bill, and we hope you will support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions, Representative Davis?
Thank you, Chair. And this may actually be a question for the co-chairs again, is maybe comparing and contrasting how you see this investment going as compared with the Oregon Investment Fund, because I know OIF does like to focus on Oregon investments, but it also, I believe, goes broader into the Pacific Northwest and outside Oregon investments. I don't know if you two can answer that or if the co-chair should.
Representative Davis. I'll try and answer that question. And the investment from the Oregon Growth Account is, over time, should be a portion of what the Oregon Growth Fund accomplishes long term. So the $28 million we hope will be, right now, it's the largest percentage of the dollars that the Oregon Growth Board, it's very confusing, the two different accounts, that the Oregon Growth Board will oversee. Over time, that should be a smaller portion. If you think about what we want to accomplish over time, and let's assume we have $150 million to invest, there are some restrictions that exist in the Oregon Growth Account that we respect and will be there for a very long period of time. There'll be another portion of it that will be invested, but the basic principles that we'll invest in will not be, that's a dumb leg, will be similar to the investment principle guidelines that you see in the investment council. That they won't be identical, but the philosophy and the investment type of strategy will be similar in nature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, yeah, it does, and part of it is you don't know what you don't know, to quote a famous politician. So I'm learning. And the Oregon Investment Fund, I mean, they've spent a lot of time and effort picking managers. I imagine, or I would hope, that there would be sort of cross-pollination there with the work that they've been doing in picking their managers.
Yes, and we are not shy about looking at best practices and successes of others. And again, we're not going to do anything direct. So we're going to be most effective and most efficient with state dollars if we identify the things that have been done most successfully. And just also, the slice that we're talking about today predominantly is the early growth, the early stage and the growth. If you think about that whole ecosystem, there's debt and equity financing that we also want to deliver more efficiently and more effectively, and that's part of our long-term strategy. So a lot of what we're talking about today is a portion of the pie, and that portion that we're focusing on is the early stage and the growth.
Go ahead. Thank you, Chair. And is that going to be restricted to Oregon?
I'm sorry, was what going to be restricted to Oregon?
That portion of the fund, early stage, is restricted to Oregon startups.
The intent is to really put that money in Oregon, in the state of Oregon. That is the purpose and the intent of this portion of that early stage growth fund.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Lively?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I believe a comment that was made by the previous speaker about a large amount of money, massive failures, and now we're going to move to a model that's maybe smaller amount of money and quicker failures. And the reason, I guess I want to follow up on that a little bit, because the outcomes we're expecting down the road is companies, successful companies and jobs, but I worry about the churn in the jobs, because just creating jobs and them only lasting a year because the companies fail isn't necessarily a good job. So I guess I'm trying to understand as we're putting this model together.
Right.
So I'd like to hear a little bit more
sure.
about that.
Representative Lively, I think my comment had to do with the life cycle of these companies. So mm-hmm. at the earliest stage, so the traditional VC model had thrown large amounts of dollars against whatever might be the next Google idea. And you often had situations, even in the early 2000s, where you'd have companies with 40 or 50 employees, and they hadn't even proven out the design. They hadn't even proven out that there's actually a business model, and you got a lot of terrific failures. Now what's happening is the philosophy created by guys like Steve Blank and people out of Silicon Valley is saying, wait a minute, let's try to prove the concept earlier and iterate it, or fail it, or make it successful. So a key aspect on these earliest stage companies is to provide them with the mentoring and the feedback and the support, but it doesn't require as large amounts of dollars. I think Jerry's point was, as they move through the funnel and you get later stage, yes, now you need more capital. So I think the point is, provide the right kind of resources dependent upon where the company is in its life cycle. And for these earliest stage companies, it's as much the advisory services as it is the access to capital.
And if I might add just one comment to that, that also also helps us retain the companies in Oregon. As companies grow, if you provided the mentoring, the seed capital, people are grown in Oregon, the chances, the stickiness of that company staying in Oregon is equally as important as those original jobs that were created.
Sure. Mr. Chair, if I
may. Yes, please.
So, just to carry this further, because when I worked in economic development, one of the things I read a lot was the amount of companies that failed in the first 5 years, or so that whatever that figure is, and I've heard all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
So in this model, I'm assuming it doesn't necessarily mean that figure's going to change, but we'll have more success on the ones that make it through.
Correct.
Yeah, I think there's the term they call fail quickly, and
yeah.
and we've seen it even with the accelerator. So I mentioned there were 11 companies that actually had made it through.
Mm-hmm.
There were 6 companies that failed, and by failure, what they meant was by going through this rigorous boot camp, if you will, working with mentors, by the 6th or 8th week, and it's a 12-week process, they realized that the original idea they had didn't really have viability.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't destroy them. They hadn't put large amounts of capital at waste. They were on to the next idea. So the idea here is, instead of spending $20 million before you figure out that it's a bad idea, let's figure it out in the first 12 weeks, if at all possible.
Thank you.
And in fact, at the risk of saying something in front of people who know more about it than I do, the idea that even if it gets to the point where it's a viable business for a while and then doesn't work, the idea of creating a culture where there is more entrepreneurship and people who are willing to try again, that's a good thing as well. Other questions here? Representatives.
Thank you. I want to follow up on your comment, Chair, which I think is very accurate. VC work is as much, I think, about the people as it is about the companies and creating an environment in which people want to be in Oregon, just as we're doing, for example, in the film industry. It's as much based in intellectual capital as it is in actual capital. And to the extent we can create that environment in Oregon, that's why you see companies continuing to start up in Silicon Valley despite high cost of living, despite a rather unfavorable tax structure, because there still is that intellectual capital there. If we can move some of that up north with, I think, a better environment, that's going to be successful.
I think that's one of our most important jobs as legislators. Appreciate that. Thank you. Next up, Skip Newberry, Monica Enan, and Imar. I'm always going to mispronounce your last name.
Bouchas.
Thank you. Have you decided on your batting order?
I think so. Do you guys want me to kick it off, provide some context?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Skip Newberry. I'm president of the Technology Association of Oregon. The TAO, or Technology Association of Oregon, represents a combination of what was once the Software Association of Oregon, which has existed since about 1989 in the state, as well as the former Tech America Oregon chapter, which was consisting primarily of semiconductor and computer electronics manufacturers in the state. A lot of the fastest growing industries in the state use and rely on technology to fund innovation and their growth. And one thing that we're really intensely focused on is how do we look at those earlier stage companies in the types of services that we as an association provide to support that kind of growth. And many of our members are made up by companies that have been funded by angels, VCs, as well as private equity firms. And there was a Kauffman study that was referenced a couple of times earlier today, which I think is significant because it found that over the last 10 years, the most net new job creation overwhelmingly occurred with what are known as stage 2 companies. In other words, companies that are between roughly 11 and 99 employees. And those are what are termed kind of the high growth companies. There's a lot of opportunities to look at how do we provide wraparound services along the growth cycle, in particular with those companies that are creating the most number of net new jobs. One thing that I'll mention too is that In the time that I've been at SAO and now TAO, I've had a chance to travel around the state and meet with a lot of people in a variety of what I'd call technology hubs and startup hubs. And you've got places like Bend and Hood River, down in Medford, Ashland, Corvallis, and then Eugene as well. And you're going to hear from some people today that represent entrepreneurs, executives within the technology community who have grown companies over several years, sometimes longer, and they're going to tell you a little bit about why some of the work of the Oregon Growth Board is so vitally important to an industry that is one of the fastest growing and also the largest in terms of economic output for the state. Just in the Dalles, we have one of the largest data centers in the world in the form of Google's investment there. In Portland, it was recently recognized that that region was one of the top five mobile centers in the country for mobile software development, both in terms of GDP, so the economic output created by the people that were there, as well as the numbers of people that were there. And we have companies like eBay and Walmart Labs who are investing there significantly to have mobile development centers to take advantage of that content. We also have Bend, where, in the last few years, there's consistently been one of the fastest growing companies in the country, G5 Search Marketing, which is now at about 150 or so employees, if not more. In Corvallis, it was recently ranked one of the most innovative cities in the country, and that was measured by number of patents per capita. So, again, you have the universities playing a big role there. In Medford Ashland, I was talking to Michael Smith from SoReady on the car ride down here about an e-week or tech week that he's planning for October. And they just recently in the last year discovered that they have 11 times the national average of e-commerce firms per capita. And that puts them third behind sort of ecosystems that surround MIT and NYU respectively. So again, there's some astounding stuff going on around the state, and most people even within the state don't even know about it. And so the question is, how do we start to use limited resources at the state level to connect some of these assets that already exist, to connect some of these communities that are already doing fantastic things in their own right? And, Eugene, I'd also point out that they have this incredible video gaming cluster. You have Zynga that has a significant presence there, and a lot of smaller companies as well. And so you ask yourselves, what are the ingredients to helping some of these companies start to scale? Well, obviously, capital is really important. And, of course, it's better if that capital is located locally. There's always stories over the years of companies that have gone elsewhere to seek investment and never came back. Or they got the investment and then they were required to set up another shop outside of the state. So if it's local, there's a case to be made for why that's arguably better. And the work of the Growth Board in looking to expand the local supply of capital, angel at the early stage, VC and private equity at the growth, makes a lot of sense. But capital alone is really not enough. If you look at some of the other things that people have talked about today, they're equally important. We've talked about networks, like mentors and advisors. As an association, OEN does a ton of work, especially at the early stage with companies that are, it's so vital for them to have mentor networks, advisors, and investors that they can rely on, and speed is critical. So services provided through an organization like that enhance speed are so important. Similarly, TAO has been working very closely with a lot of these stage two companies that are between 11 and 99 employees to kind of work on providing them with the mentor networks, the peer networks, the cohort groups of CEOs and other operational folks so that they can figure out, okay, now I need to grow a company. I've made it through the valley of death, so to speak. We've raised a Series A round or seed capital. Mm-hmm. Now how do we start to move on to the next stage and get that next round or go to market? And the other thing that's important is that you look at technology and it's increasingly ubiquitous. You have both companies that are users of technology as well as producers of it, sometimes both. And so just like capital and these networks technology is also a vital piece that's driving innovation these days. And then finally, we've heard people mention talent. So the educational infrastructure, and that's more important than ever in technology these days. They're capital light companies. There's not a lot of investment required outside of the talent piece. And here we have a great competitive advantage in Oregon. I mentioned all these great places. They all also happen to be very beautiful places to live, fantastic quality of life. And right now, that's increasingly attractive to people like in California that, you know, yes, there's intellectual capital there, but the case could be made there's some nice stuff here too as well. So with that, I just want to emphasize one final point. It really struck me when Tom Reinhart was saying that, you know, the state seems very committed through this process in helping to align and coordinate amongst a variety of different resources that have been created over the years. And I'd also like to say to the committee, you know, don't be shy about also challenging in return at least the nonprofit or support organizations to also step up and try and coordinate and align. And, you know, the examples that were cited earlier about successful opportunities and models in other places, there was a market similarity, which was, you know, the fact that there was really clear nonprofit, public, and private collaboration. And so that's something that I think is possible here, and I don't think it really can be overlooked. Thank you.
Thanks, Skip. Amar?
My name is Amar Bushes. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Moonshadow Mobile, Inc. Moonshadow develops big data visualization technology in Eugene, and all of our engineering is actually based in Eugene. I started my first software company when I was a freshman in college. It failed. I tried again when I was going for my master's, and that one did work out. Over the last 25 years, I've probably started five software companies. In 1989, we had developed a product, and we were set up, ready to set up distribution in the United States. And I traveled around the U.S., went to some trade shows, and I met six companies that expressed interest in helping me to, you know, establish a beachhead in the United States. One of the companies was led by a gentleman, his name was Bob Palioka. He was running a software company back in Portland. And he said, Amar, this is a great product you have. It's adjacent to our technology, but we wouldn't be interested in distributing it for you. If you come here, we'd help you, but we wouldn't do the work for you. The other proposals were more like, okay, give us a lot of money, we'll set up distribution for you, or just give us the product, we'll do it for you. Immediately after the show where I met him, I jumped on a plane and I visited him in Portland. We really clicked. He was very surprised I was visiting him. He said, why are you here? I told you I don't want to do it for you. I felt I could trust him because he had no financial interest. So 6 months later, I set up shop in Portland. And it was really interesting. It was one of the most difficult decisions I made early in my career as an entrepreneur, to go off and say, okay, I'm making a key decision, you know, purely based on, you know, emotions. I like this guy. And then I thought about it some more, and I thought, yeah, that's more important than logic. So, and that for a software entrepreneur, okay. So we started in Portland. He mentored me for a couple of years, and we, you know, we grew the company, and we developed products together, which were then acquired by Visio, which then was acquired by Microsoft. So over the last 25 years, I've set up probably five different software companies and developed 15 different product lines. In some cases, after a couple of years, I threw the product in the garbage can, took my losses. In other cases, I licensed the technology or the patents to some of the largest companies in the world. Now let's focus a little bit on Eugene, where we're located. Over the last couple of years, something really interesting has happened in Eugene. You know, one of the things that happened is that they've opened up downtown again. They've redeveloped the Broadway Commerce Building. And there are now probably 20 little software startups in that building working together. And what we've seen is that a lot of software companies have actually gone back to the core. I did a little quick math yesterday, and I saw at least 75 software companies with, you know, a combined at least 1,000 employees just in the Eugene area. So this is pretty interesting. And I think what's happening in Eugene is that we're seeing a combination of, you know, risk capital. There is some risk capital in Eugene because of exits in the past, like Garage Games and some of the others. We see talent. We see entrepreneurs. And we see an environment where you have mentorship. And we even see, and I especially want to thank Representative Nathanson, we see combinations where we can work together with local government agencies, and we're trying now to redeploy the old steam pipe system, put fiber in it, connect all the buildings, basically use 50-year-old infrastructure, 100-year-old infrastructure to jump into the future. So it's a really, really interesting thing to do.
And Mr. Bush, as we've come to that awkward time in the day when I have to start hurrying people along in respect to the time and the number of people who have yet to testify.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
So what's really important are the social networks, and face-to-face contact, networks of people who are entrepreneurs like me, participating now as an angel investor in the Willamette Angel Conference, participating, with Skip in TAO events and with the city, talent pools, entrepreneur pools, and all of those together in a small area can help ignite this industry. And certainly, if you go one step beyond and you can have these little centers communicate with each other, then I think it's a win-win situation. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is that okay?
Can you hear me? Yes, in fact, you can sit normally. Okay. If you get too close, it distorts.
Okay.
So it's perfect.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be here. My name is Monica Enand, and I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Zapproved. We have a compliance software platform that we sell to corporate legal departments of big companies that are experiencing litigation. I've raised capital for the company in 2009 and 2010. One round in 2009 and again in 2010, and we've been cash flow positive for the past year and growing organically. We have 22 employees. Our revenue has doubled over the year prior, and we're on track to more than doubling again this year. I can say without a doubt, so unlike Imar, I think everybody has different stories, but I'm not a serial entrepreneur. This is the first time I founded a company. I spent most of my career at Intel. I came from big company environments and learned a lot about technology and grew a passion for software and for technology there, but didn't know very much about starting or growing a company. When I raised that first round of capital, I can absolutely say without a doubt that it is so critical that of that capital, probably half of it was, or more than half, was from people I never knew before, but that I met through networking events and entrepreneurial engagements that were receptive and interested. And more importantly than that, they were been there, done that CEOs. I have a board of all ex-CEOs of very successful startups. And what you learn, I think Representative Davis said, that in the Valley, people want to go there because why is it? Because you kind of wonder. And the reason is because what you learn is, there's newfangled technology and there's newfangled devices, and that's all cool. But the truth is, all these businesses, they hit the same. It's all the same time and time again. The challenges, the strategy, the partnerships, how to navigate those things, how to decide when to grow and how far to grow so that you don't fail to, fail or prematurely. All of that is that there are people who develop pattern recognition because they've done it before. And I didn't. Because I came out of a big company environment, I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't know who to talk to. I knew I had good technologists that I knew from Intel and other places, but I didn't have that. And TAO, which was SAO at the time, and Tech America and OEN and TIE, it was having those places where I could just go at any time, and people were receptive and would be willing to talk to you and have coffee with you. And I absolutely know that led to, I can tell you that our first giant customer in the insurance industry was AIG, and that was led to from an investor mentor Many of my investors in my second round are direct relationships with mentors that I cultivated in the first round. And now, I think the only last thing I would say is that currently, I love what's going on in Portland. I very frequently have other CEOs and other software executives come and visit us, and we go visit them and talk about how to grow, what are the next challenges, and having that peer ability to go, what are you doing? Well, what are you doing? And really learn from each other has really helped help the company grow.
And we're glad you're part of Team Oregon as well. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one. From the first presentation on this panel, I was intrigued by one of the final comments about encouraging us not to hold back from challenge. I think I have the gist of it. Not to hold back in challenging the nonprofits, too, and mentioning private-public collaboration. Could you please say just a bit more
Certainly.
About what else we could try to encourage from the nonprofit or private organization?
An emphasis yep. on just a bit, please.
Sure. Yes. So we're already talking and in many respects kind of working together in a way that is looking at creating an entrepreneurial roadmap with a lot of these different organizations. You know, how can we better align our services and communicate them effectively through good information to entrepreneurs so there isn't a lot of stepping on one another's toes or confusion about where do I go based on my stage or my size or my needs. And I would say that the time is ripe. It's exciting to see what's going on at the state level. And given the necessity to have public, private, and nonprofit firing on all cylinders, in the 18 months I've been in the nonprofit world, which I have never experienced up until recently, I'm really optimistic about what I'm seeing in terms of the collaboration between organizations like OEN, TIE, TAO, et cetera. And I think that it'd be a shame if we didn't take advantage of looking at things and how we can leverage all of our collective assets as we start to tackle some of these key problems.
Noted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our hurrying through should not be taken as any indication of a lack of interest on your stories or what you are contributing to this conversation. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Diane Freeman, Eric Rosenfeld, and Dennis McNaney, please.
Chair Reed, if I could come up at the same time as both the entrepreneurs that are as a panel, that would be great.
But okay, we got one seat, so that means you just wait to the next Perfect. Round. Okay, so with the empty seat then, Isabel Pena. And you guys get to decide who goes first.
Please, want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll go first. I'm not shy. Great, thank you. Chairman, committee members, thanks for having me. I'm Eric Rosenfeld. I'm a founder and manager of the Oregon Angel Fund, and we are very appreciative of Patty Moss and Jerry Langler for their leadership of the Oregon Growth Board and the work that you've put into getting that shaped. And we refer to Linda Weston as the midwife of the Oregon Angel Fund and Jim Coonan as the godfather. And everything we do is collaborative, and this is really our community. And I hope that the state is impressed at the degree of collaboration that occurs between the Technology Association, the Entrepreneurs Association, and all of us. I'd like to just say a little bit about what is the Oregon Angel Fund and why it's become a nationally recognized model and why the Oregon Growth Account has been instrumental in our growth and success to date and why we believe the Oregon Growth Board will be strategically and critically important to our state's competitiveness. The slide that says what is the Oregon Angel Fund, we provide accessible angel investing to individuals around the state. It's just $25,000 each to invest in the fund, and the idea is to make it very accessible and take as much risk out of it as possible. It's a very collaborative model. We're taking the best of an angel group and the best features of a venture fund, combining them together, and the best practices of both. We want to create a diversified portfolio of Oregon startups that we believe will be the future growth companies and employers in our state.
We try to be as disciplined and as rigorous in our diligence and in our management and reporting as a venture fund. And the goal is to produce superior returns to create wealth for the entrepreneurs, their teams, for our investors, and for the state, and to have that wealth reinvested in Oregon. And it's interesting, just in the last year, we have received calls and spoken with people, economic development leaders and investors in Florida, New Jersey, Southern California, London, Shanghai, interested in this partnership that the Oregon Angel Fund has in the state because it's starting to get results and serve as a model. The slide that says dedicated to Oregon just talks about our statewide base. We have investors now from Ashland, Bend, Cannon Beach, Corvallis, Eugene, Salem, the Gorge, and Portland. And we have investments now in Bend, Corvallis, Eugene, Portland, and Vancouver, Washington. And each year we look at companies and meet with economic development leaders in all the corners of our state to try to be helpful and provide feedback and support to startups. The capital gap it shows that our the little role that we play in the funding cycle here in Oregon. We invest as little as $100,000 in deals, and we can invest up to $2 million. Currently, we're budgeting about $800,000 to $1 million per deal, and we hope to find the five most promising startups in Oregon in any sector, in any region of Oregon, and support those companies after we invest. The slide that says investment portfolio shows the companies that we've backed to date. And Design Medics, for example, is affiliated with Portland State and OHSU. Columbia Power Technologies is a technology leader in wave energy. They're affiliated with OSU and their wave energy lab. Diabetomics is doing innovative diabetes testing using saliva instead of blood, and they're affiliated with OHSU. Clear Catheter Systems is a medical device company in Central Oregon. Cascade Prodrug is developing safer chemotherapy that's more targeted, and they're affiliated with the University of Oregon in Eugene. And many of these companies have deep innovation and have very high margins in their products. And of the six companies that have sold to date, all of those companies continue to grow just under a new banner, such as Cisco or Dell or whoever the acquiring company is. And there's several hundred people being added to those companies as a division of Cisco or Dell or Incom and the companies that are acquiring them. And those teams that have had exits are now investing in the Oregon Angel Fund and mentoring the next generation of entrepreneurs and getting the cycle going. So we're starting to see the wealth that's been created in the last couple of years being reinvested in Oregon. And the slide that says performance by fund year just shows that we're at break even or profitable with all the funds to date. And we're focused on generating a rate of return, and we've been very, very fortunate that all the funds are performing very well. And then the slide that says economic impact through December of last year, you'll see that the Oregon Angel Fund has invested $15 million in the state of Oregon. For every dollar that we've invested, roughly $7 have come in with us or after us, often from out-of-state VCs and partners like Diane's firm, Voyager Capital, and others from California and the East Coast. And we have invested in 27 startups. Those companies have created 812 jobs in Oregon. The average wage is about $75,000. And the combined portfolio generated revenue last year of $146 million. And you have to think that, remember that two-thirds of the companies that we invested in were pre-revenue at the point that we got involved. And that's where we like to play. We're often the first formal investor. And so those companies have grown to generate $146 million just last year. And corporate and payroll taxes to the state of Oregon from those companies last year was $3.4 million. So the state is receiving over twice its money back already that it's investing each year. So the state is investing $1.5 million annually through the Oregon Growth Account in the Oregon Angel Fund and receiving $3.4 million just in payroll taxes. And for every 19,000 that we invest in Oregon, a job has been created. So it's hard to think of a more efficient or effective economic development program, if you will, but it's also providing a rate of return and tax revenue for the state. And the virtuous cycle slide shows how we're trying to get this cycle going of wealth creation and reinvestment in Oregon.
And that's probably a good place to wrap up. I'm hoping.
Okay. Can I say real quickly about what the Oregon growth account is done, or do you want to take questions or go on?
I think I'd better see how we get through this panel and then see if we have questions. My only disappointment is you didn't include my favorite slide of yours, how to grow a Silicon Forest, but we'll come back to that at some point.
So, absolutely.
From the Angel Fund to Voyager.
Absolutely. Hi, thanks for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm Diane Freeman. I'm a venture partner with Voyager Capital here in Oregon. Voyager is a regional VC firm headquartered out of Seattle with offices in Seattle, Portland, and Menlo Park. And what we do is invest in West Coast early stage high-tech companies. We're usually the first institutional money in, so we come in after the angels, after the seed investors, and basically get into a deal to stay in the deal through the life of that opportunity. I represent Voyager here in Oregon. Voyager's got $360 million under management. We're investing out of our third fund. We're raising our fourth fund right now. And our limited partners include folks like Carnegie Mellon, Vanderbilt University, Abu Dhabi Trust. And from Oregon, we're very honored to have Myra Memorial Trust, OIF Credit Suisse, OCF, and in Fund 4, OGA has committed. We are currently the most active VC in Oregon. We've done 7 investments over the last 9 years. We have 4 active investments right now. 3 have been sold, 2 in the last year, Cryptic being one to SureScripts and Geoloki to ESRI. So our 4 active companies that we have today, just to give you a flavor for what, when you take this funnel that you've heard us all talk about, what happens here. First one, Elemental Technologies in the world of digital media. These are folks that encode and transcode video. So if you do HBO Go on your iPad as an example, that's Elemental. Huge market. These are folks who have raised now $30 million over 3 rounds, over 100 employees in a building downtown, have a valuation over $100 million. Acton Software, SaaS-based marketing automation, another huge market. Over 2.5 years, have raised 3 rounds, over $30 million, $15 million in the bank, have a valuation over $140 million with over 100 people also in the company. It's an amazing set of opportunities that we've got here. Chirpify, Social Commerce, they're the first people in the world who are doing buying and selling over Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, these are just world-class opportunities that are existing here in Portland. I am personally also on the boards of TIE Oregon, OEN, the Oregon Israeli Business Alliance, and was on the selecting board with PDC for the Portland Seed Fund that determined the direction and the development of it, as well as the selection of Angela and Jim Houston. And I'm an active mentor. And the reason for all of that is because we've got to feed the top of the funnel for me to get the best opportunities that are possible to come down so that we can make the best investments later on. Over the last 4 years, on average, I look at 120 deals a year in Oregon. These are unique opportunities, and we do roughly 1 to 2 a year. And that's the average ratio for any VC. So, you know, I talk to a lot of folks at the top of the funnel. It's a long dating game. I may date them for 2 years before we put our money into them. But it's something that is important in order for us to get the best possible investments. When we look at companies, what we look for is companies with very large markets, with really disruptive technology or business models, and with great teams. And the reason that the great teams comment is important is because, as you've heard, if you're in the Bay Area, you can basically have a great team, you can have a great technology, or great technology in a great market, and not like the team. You can get rid of the team, and VCs will make an investment and say, you know, nice to know you, and they'll replace them very quickly. That's not how we roll in Oregon. Basically, what we do here when we invest on an institutional round is we're betting on the people as much as we are markets and technology that we like. We may switch them out later on as the company scales, but those people are critical to us, and that's an important fact to remember as we go forward in this. Final background on Voyager, we like to syndicate with other VCs, and that's critical for you to understand as to how the money basically is leveraged, because where we can basically put in $2 to $5 million on a Series A, we will bring with us other money from other VCs. And so how this basically adds up over the last 5 years is we've put of our money, $36 million of capital to work here. We've leveraged and attracted over $100 million additional dollars into these same companies. And that has equaled between 350 and 400 jobs in Oregon with these companies that we've invested in. If we talk about why Portland for these companies, it's really simple. Number one, the efficiency of the dollar. So to the point made before, you know, we can put $500 to $1 million to work here that would take $3 to $5 million in the Bay Area. We can put $3 to $5 million that would take $6 to $10 million. It is absolutely measurable, not only to the Bay Area, but to Seattle as well. The second point, and as some of you have heard me say before, the reality is we're the last bastion of coolness on the West Coast. And the reality of that is that what's interesting is a lot of people think that we're moving these people from the Bay Area up here, and that's true. But what's really going on is we're moving people from the East Coast, and that's really interesting. So what's happening is they're looking up and down the West Coast, and obviously the dollar is really attractive. We're a great place to live, and they're choosing Portland. And so if I look at a lot of the new CEOs that have come into town, they're East Coast folks. This may be their second or third deal, their experience. The value and the quality of those business plans have increased over the last few years, and that's been resulting in the types of numbers that you hear me talk about before. We're obviously a great place to live, and we have a great talent pool, and that's not just developers. That's across all skill sets. But there's some other facts that need to be understood in what I call the Portland experiment. Number one, and I say this, and I believe it sincerely, especially in my world, lower in the funnel, institutional money, every single company that should be getting funded right now in high tech with venture money is getting funded. The VCs are here. The money is flowing in. They are not requesting that companies move down to the Bay Area anymore. They don't have to be resident here. I get calls constantly from VCs saying, what are you looking at? What can we see? So that's number one. Number two, we are a town that is hiring. We are importing talent now. There is not enough people here in town for the opportunities that are there. Now, this is critical because I called it the Portland experiment, and if we're going to get this to continue to work this way, we're going to have to do a few things. There are over 8 companies in the last 9 months that have raised Series Cs, like Elemental and Act On, that have over $100 million in valuation right now, are hiring, and that are going to be home runs for us somewhere in the next 12 to 24 months. That's not only wealth creation, but that's also going to be our reputation and our value to be able to continue to scale this up with more and more investors and more entrepreneurs. And if and when that happens, it will absolutely prove that we're not only a hot city for entrepreneurs to be able to come into here, but that we are also a hot city for investors to invest as well. So we can't let what's going on right now fail. So from my perspective, what does the state need to do in order to help support that? It's a few things. Obviously, as you've heard, you've got to be an active partner with us, and that's not only in terms of being part of the ecosystem, all the way through that funnel, right? You've heard us talk about it. So from the angel programs that you've heard today, all the way through the programs and the mentoring and all that we need to do through the funnel as it relates to the growth objectives. And that is statewide, and that is cross-sector. That we need to make sure that we are supporting TAO and OEN and the other programs here that are basically producing not only the programs and the content, but the delivery statewide. We can take what we've learned in Portland. We can do train the trainer outreach to other clusters of cities that have mentors, angels, universities, et cetera, and we can see this scale much more quickly than if we just tried to start this one by one. We know what we're doing now. We can repeat it very rapidly. If I were to make two recommendations in terms of where the money should go, immediately in my mind, the first thing outside of the programs that are funding some of the investment arms is first a technology backbone that can basically provide a single unified database that can provide all the resources, companies, names, programs to those inside the system, inside the state, as well as if you're outside the state, there's a single portal that you can find. I want to move to Oregon. How do I start a business here? This single solitary action that we could take, I think, would differentiate Oregon nationally and is something that I think that we have the resources, but not the money right now to do within the programs that exist. The second thing is the program dollars. We've got a whole lot that we know that's packaged up, but in order to accelerate this statewide, we've got to be able to give OEN and TAO the dollars that they require in order to produce the content and deliver those programs, whether it's face-to-face or using technology to do that. We can do it statewide. It's absolutely there to be done, but we need more resources to do so. So the combination of those public and private funds with universities, I think, is critical. And one final thing, because I got the mic right for 1 second.
Yeah, I can cut it off.
Thank you. You wouldn't even go there. One final point. And I want to tell you what my biggest concern is, because I happen to be quite bullish on the opportunity and the growth that's going on. But I have a huge concern about this whole thing falling apart right now. And that is that every single solitary person that we're recruiting in here is in their 20s and 30s. They're bringing young families. They're starting their families here. They all ask me one question. Every one of them. What about the schools? And so I urge you that if you can agree with all of the passion of all the people that are sitting here in the room around the urgency to grow our entrepreneurial base, that you equally agree with the urgency to try and fix the PERS problem in a very aggressive and now way, not kicking it down the road, so that we can keep the talent coming here and be as differentiated as I believe is possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Penny, I think I understand this might be your first time testifying, so all you need to do is start with your name and tell us what you think, and I promise I will try not to cut you off, at least for a while.
I must be safe. Chair Reed and members of the committee, my name is Isabel Pena, and I am a student in West Salem High School, and I support the concept of the Oregon Growth Board, because it would have a connection to education. It would help fund through a chain of events, and it will help the school grow activities and revive clubs and classes that could have been killed under the problems of budget cuts. The chain of events starts when a new company hires Oregonians, more taxes are paid by individuals and businesses, and when more taxes are paid, there are more funds available for schools like mine. Thank you for starting the conversation and having me in the stand.
Thank you. Go Titans, and thank you very much for making that connection to education, as you both did. Are there any questions for this panel? I don't see any. Eric, thank you. I apologize for having to cut you off. I would commend the last couple of slides to the rest of the committee. The Growth Board, there are a lot of things named growth in this conversation, but the Growth Board is very closely connected to the growth account, and I expect we'll have time to come back and follow up on what's included in here. So I appreciate you all being here and your help. Thank you. And that brings us with about 5 to 7 minutes left. Dennis, your panel, please.
I will be brief. In fact, I will be the briefest of all the speakers that are ending this panel. But I do want to do a few points of differentiation. My name is Dennis McDaniel. I'm Chairman Reed, honorable committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to voice our support on behalf of Bioscience Association for the bill. We've been involved for the last, I think, 18 months in helping drive forward the concept. I brought with me two entrepreneurs who I'll leave their introductions as they will. I think I'd like to go back to the funnel. I mean, one of the most exciting things happening in Oregon right now for the bioscience industry is we have a funnel that is jam-packed at the top, thanks to the generous contributions of Phil Knight and others. We have over $225 million getting pumped into the research end of this funnel, and it would be a crime if, when those ideas get to a point where they can be commercialized, there isn't an investment ecosystem available to do that efficiently, because we know all too well what happens if that doesn't exist. Those ideas migrate out of town. I will add one thing that was recently announced as part of a study that was published called Leadership in Decline, which charts the investments of nations as a percentage of GDP in health investments. China is going to dedicate $308 billion in the next 5 years to just biopharmaceutical industry and research. And if you think about that, that is almost as much as NIH is going to spend over that same period for all health research in the United States. Our competitors are not just other states. Our competitors are other countries, and they are looking for these jobs and these companies and these ideas. And one last thing before I pass over to the two entrepreneurs that are joining me. The state has a double benefit in the kind of companies these entrepreneurs are building. They're designed not only to create jobs and value in the state of Oregon, but they're also uniquely able to lower the cost of health care in the state, which I think is a dual benefit. So these ideas don't just generate jobs. They solve one of the largest fiscal problems I think our state faces. And I'll let them explain their individual ideas and opportunities.
I think Dennis set an excellent example for brevity. So please please try to follow.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Sarah Cota, and I'm from Bend. I have a drug delivery medical device company in Bend called Jetstream. We are focused on reducing asthma attacks and ER visits for children that suffer from asthma. I didn't bring our device. We have a device that's out for packaging. It's a for nebulized medication. It's a mask-free, hands-free delivery device for children to deliver their asthma medication when they're the most compliant, which is when they're sleeping. This was born out of a need. My son, Jet, who I named the company after, was diagnosed with asthma at the age of 2, and I know how beyond challenging it is to try to get kids to take their asthma medication. Asthma is the number one reason that kids go to the emergency room. It's the number one cause of avoidable hospitalizations. $2.5 billion a year spent on healthcare costs that could have been avoided for these children. And the reason that it's avoidable is because they should be taking their daily maintenance medication. They're not taking it because they're not compliant, because they don't want to do the standard device, which requires them to wear a mask with a tight-fitting seal. Treatments take about 15 to 20 minutes twice a day. So we've taken that out, we've removed the mask, wait till they're asleep, deliver their medication then, and reduce ER visits. The year before I had a prototype in hand, Jet went to the emergency room 18 times since he's been our guinea pig for the last year. He hasn't been to the ER once for his asthma, so I'm able to treat him when he's asleep. We're partnered with Bend Research. We don't lose any more medication than the standard of care, and we're just moving forward from there out into other markets, but asthma is the first vertical we're going to hit because we know asthma.
Be sure to touch on your fundraising efforts locally.
So we've raised $250,000, mostly out of Angels in Central Oregon, a couple out of state. Our biggest need right now is for capital. We need $750 total to get to market. It's expensive to raise money. We're not software. We're a product that you can drop on your foot. We can't iterate as quick as software. We have a lot of challenges because of that, a lot of costs behind that. I'm in Portland almost every week trying to raise more money. And in about the last month, had a lot of conversations with a lot of advisors and people from out of state that are wondering why I'm still in Oregon trying to raise money. How come I haven't gone to Seattle, into the Bay Area, and to Southern California, where they believe it's a lot easier to raise capital?
Thank you. We appreciate it. Sir?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Duffy Dufresne. I'm a entrepreneur for a long period of time. I feel like that's almost an Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people might consider that a positive attribute. Some people might consider that a character defect. My background has been in the life sciences for my entire career. I have been in big medical device, a big medical device company, a big pharma company. And then over the last 20 years, I've been CEO of 5 different medical device or biotech companies, mostly in the Boston area. I was involved in taking 2 companies public. I've raised in excess of a couple hundred million in various public or VC or angel investment funds over time. I grew up in Portland, moved back to Portland for personal reasons about a year and a half ago, have been very involved with the Oregon Bioscience Association, serve on a number of life science company boards, mentor a lot of early stage technologies, and I'm involved right now with a medical device company that makes rehabilitative therapy equipment in a totally new area. We are just commercializing that company, have raised $250,000 previously, and are now starting a raise for an additional $1 million, and are on the cusp of commercializing that first piece of equipment. So my experience is, you know, I kind of look at what the state of Oregon has done and feel that there are a number of things that have been really admirably well done. I look at Onami and Otrati and Oregon Best as really wonderful institutes for catalyzing an awful lot of development of technology with a commercial bent. I look at angel investment groups, Oregon Angel, Angel Oregon, Willamette Angel Conference, the Ben Venture Conference. I think there's something in Hood River, and I'm sure there's elsewhere. And really, that development has been astounding. It really is a implicit private government effort over time. I was really impressed at what has occurred as a hybrid investment vehicle that's very novel in Oregon Angel Fund. It's been very effective. From my perspective, this is obviously a complex issue in terms of how do you best try to use limited resources to further stimulate a very important early sector or technology sectors generally, life science and technology. The issue in my mind is the thing that can be done is to add as much horsepower to the already existing process as is possible. It will never be easy for an early stage company to raise funds. It ought to be incredibly painful to raise funds, but it ought to be doable in a way that retains that business in Oregon. I just spent yesterday and the day before in Seattle, where we were getting a great deal of traction on the raise of this round, in part because that's where, for life science, a great deal of money is. But there are a lot of wonderful resources in Oregon, and what can be done, in my view, is to just add horsepower and add it in a way, like any small entrepreneurial firm with limited resources, to add it in the most efficient way possible.
Thank you, Mr. Dufresne. We'll endeavor to get some more horsepower so that we can keep you here. We appreciate it.
You in 30 seconds, promise.
I'm starting the clock.
Back to Representative Nathanson. I heard the comment earlier. I think a working example of the partnership is for, and I'm a board member of Otrati, is for Otrati to commit, as I believe they have in their plans, to match 2 or 3 to 1 any money that's available as part of their fund that they're trying to grow. So certainly, as a board member, I'm committed to trying to achieve that.
7 seconds to spare. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much. Before we go, I want to ask Paul Grove if you want to have a chance to run very quickly through the amendment that's forthcoming. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. We obviously will not be moving the bill today. We're waiting on a couple of amendments, and I think Paul can rush us through them so that they're not brand new when they do show up.
Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee. Hopefully I'm on the 30-second clock as well. And I will go through this very quickly. I've handed out a cheat sheet with respect to the section-by-section breakdown in terms of what the dash ones entail. I won't belabor the point. You have those items in front of you. Specifically, they talk about the powers, the duties, and the functions of the board. Excuse me. Very similar to what was contemplated in House Bill 4040, the initial legislation. A couple of items that I did not include in the handout, but I will provide to the committee, speak to the ability of the board to contract with the fund manager and manage invest monies in both the growth account and the growth fund, as well as the basic establishment of the Oregon Growth Fund. There will be -2 amendments as well, specific to Section 11 in the dash ones that speak to the operative date of the board and when it would begin, as well as highlighting the coordination function with Business Oregon and its business finance resources.
That was quick. Any questions on that? We'll leave it with the committee for your reading edification. The amendments are coming, and we'll be back to the bill. I think there's a lot here, and appreciate your discussion and attention today. So close the public hearing on, I want to make sure I get all the numbers here. House Bill 2323, House Bill 2223, and House Bill 2330. Anything else to come for the committee today? Let's see. Have a good weekend. See you Monday. Please adjourn.
Okay.